time I gave someone's talk, and although I'm the co-author of some of those papers that now we're going to discuss here, and classical biological control has been used extensively against insects and mites. In most of this case, have been used parasitoids and predators. And there's also a lot of cases where insects have been used to control weeds, and also fungal pathogen to control weeds. But we have searching the literature about all the cases of classical biological control using pathogens and nematodes. And what we see is that usually the difference is really large. So parasitoids and predators have been used in 5,393 times against insects and mites. And also arthropods have been used 806 times against weeds. But there are only 131 cases where pathogens and nematodes have been used against the same host. What I'm going to be talking today is just to give a background about how we collect this data, how you analyze the data. And most of my talk, I'll be describing a number of programs and give you some results in terms of rate of establishment by time, type of microbes used, type of host, and the habitat that the host lives. During this presentation, I'm going to be comparing this with data from use of other natural enemies, such as parasitoids and predators. And there's also the environmental concern of introducing pathogens, so just going to give some information that we collect during this time. And also, I mean, this is an introduction for the next three talks we're going to see today, where we're going to be discussing about specific projects that are being conducting currently. So, about 30 to 40% of the insect and mite pests in the United States are exotic. And although some authors disagree, there are some statistics showing that 40% of the decline in native species in the United States is due to the competition with exotic species. Those are threatened and species that are in danger. One way to control those introduced species, the classical biocontrol approach, that is defined as the intentional introduction of an exotic biocontrol agent for permanent establishment and long-term pest control. And many research have tried to determine in which circumstance that a natural enemy work best, you know, and why sometimes they fail to establish. You can find a lot of reviews for pathogens and parasitoids, but there's no quantitative analysis for pathogen and nematodes, and that's what we're going to try to present today. We have listed all the cases of classical biocontrol in this catalog. This was published by USDA Forest Service. It's available online, it's free in this address. We split the case of introduction by pathogens that have been accidentally introduced and pathogens that have been intentionally introduced. Just to give an example of the importance and the potential of the control using pathogens and nematodes, I can list here three examples of accidental introduction that result in a good control. The first one is the gypsy moth NPV virus from introduced in North America, and also against gypsy moth entomophaga mammae, a fungal pathogen was found here. It probably also an accidental introduction, although this fungus has been intentionally introduced about 100 years ago. And the third example is the European spruce sawfly. It's an NPV that is already established in a wide range areas in North America. So based on the data we list in that catalog, you provide all the information as possible in terms of establishment and success and the results of those release. We published this year a commentary paper in biological control. It's a review of all the cases where we do some quantitative analysis. We found 131 introductions against 76 species of insects and mite, and sometimes a pathogen is introduced against a group of species, not one and single species, such as some diptera, some scales. And in 48% of the cases, the pathogen established in the new area. And only 20% of the introductions, it resulted in failure. And you have 32% of the case where the fate of the introduction was not recorded. So it was really difficult to find in literature that sometimes people, they released and never went back to the place to collect the samples and see if it was established or not. So it's probably that the failure rate here would be higher than what we're presenting, because you know, when people get the negative result, you know, it's more likely that they don't publish. But if you consider only the introductions that the fate was recorded, then we have a 70% establishment rate, which is a pretty interesting result. The first case of introduction of a classical biocontrol natural enemy, it was the Vedelia beetle here in California. No? This Coccinella was introduced from Australia and provided a good control. And this was in 1889. The earliest introduction of a fungal pathogen or a pathogen in general was the Bovaria broniarii. This was in 1894, only 5 years after the introduction of the Vedelia beetle here. This was in Australia, you know, against the scarab grubs. So during the first decades until 1950, we only have a very few cases each decade of introduction of pathogens and nematodes. And all those introductions that occur in this period were fungal pathogens. So this is understandable because at that time, the knowledge about other microbes, you know, microbiology studies were really not that developed, such as studies with bacteria and virus. So fungi, they are easy to find, you know, they produce some external signs, you know, mycelia growing outside of the cadaver, and people can associate this with a disease and try to, you know, bring this disease to other place. It was not until the 1950s that a diverse group of microbes started to be used in classical biocontrol approach. So the decade of 1970 and 80, that we have a peak in terms of number, largest numbers of introductions. And then this start declining the 99 decade. This is an incomplete decade, but we only have found a very few cases of introduction recently. This decline here is probably have the same root as the decline that occurs also in parasitoids and predators, and is due to restrictions in terms of regulations. There's not a tendency, a trend in terms of establishment rate through the time. Although we expect that, you know, as the researchers learn more and have to select more the species, this would increase the establishment rate, but it is not what we see here. They probably going to be expect this for the next decades. So now it's much more difficult. People have to learn more about the natural need before they introduce. So this might increase the establishment rate. About 37 pathogens and 8 insect parasitic nematodes have been used. Fungi is the group that use most. We have 57 programs used 19 species, followed by virus and nematodes. In many cases, we have, you know, like only 10 species have been released 32 times, because some of those releases were so successful that people repeat the introduction in many different other countries. Some groups such as bacteria, oomycetes, and microsporidia have been used just a couple times. 91% of the release of virus result in establishment. We're not providing the success of those establishments in terms of control, because this was really subjective. We didn't have this information of most of the release programs. Bacteria has been used in a few cases, and only one special bacteria established in one new area. And fungi, that is the one that used most of the time, it has the establishment rate around 33%, similar to microsporidia and nematodes. We provide in this review also comparisons within each group. For example, within fungi, we have the Entomophthorellian. You probably, most of you know Entomophthica mammae, is a member of this group. And then we have the ischomycetes that used to be called the hyphomycetes. Oh, Bovaria bassiana, Metarhizan isopra are the most common. They are mostly used in the inundative approach. And when we look at the data, we expect that Entomophthorellians would be the one that has the highest establishment rate. Well, they have good attributes for classical biocontrol because they have a restricted host range. They usually cause episodic, and they can really, they have an intimate association with the host, so they can provide a good control in the field. And they have the persistent spores, or different life stages that persist in the field. There are all that are important characteristics for the biocontrol. But when you look at the data, you find that there's 50% failure of establishment of Entomophthorella against 11% of Bovaria bassiana. This is probably due to some characteristics of those groups. Although, you know, Entomophthorellians are good candidates, the problem is that they're obligate pathogen. It means that they are very difficult to be produced in laboratory, in culture media. And most of the release were done just introducing cadavers or infected hosts in the field. So the density of inoculant was very low. And also, for most of the species, people started releasing this before they actually know the life cycle, the biology, and physiology of this pathogen group. But ascomycetes, although we see only 11% failure, most of the programs, they were discontinued. I mean, they actually didn't establish. Although Bovaria bassiana and Metarhizan isopli, they have a wide host range. It means that they can contact a host that's susceptible in the field and then can persist in the environment. In most of the cases, they are cosmopolitan. They are everywhere. And people, they never search before the introduction the native strains and compare. So probably without having the genetic characterization, some biochemical way to separate the strains of those ascomycetes, we never know, you know, sure about the establishment of an ascomycete. The five species that have been used mostly in classical biocontrol, you know, microbes. First is the Oryctis sinocera virus. It's a new virus now. It has been used 18 times, followed by two fungal pathogens, Metarhizan isopli, was used 13 times, and Entomophaga myemaga 7 times. And the two nematodes, Homanomermis culicivorax and Deladinus cirrhicidicola, have been used 7 times. So you're going to listen to talks later about myemaga and also about Deladinus, and I'm going to just say a few words about the two first natural enemies here, the virus and the Metarhizium fungus. So Metarhizium, the fact that it's a cosmopolitan fungus, it has been used, I mean, it's everywhere. So most of those programs, they actually, they were done in the beginning of the last century. You know, for out of these 13 programs, only 3 programs were conducted in the last 30 years. So, you know, if you work with Metarhizium, you probably know this is the fungus that's used more in an inundative approach. And but what happened is that the researchers start to release this in the past until they figure out that this fungus cannot provide a good control in the classical way. They cannot keep the pest below the economic injury level. So now they have been used mostly, you know, producing in large amount and spraying the field in the inundative approach. The Oryctis rhinoceros virus, this is a natural enemy of the palm rhinoceros beetle. This pest is important pest of different palm trees, coconut, oil palm, and was introduced to many growing areas in South and Asia, in India. Usually the adult that caused the damage. It killed the palm trees by feeding on the root shoot. But the larvae usually live in the compost, no, not in the plant, including the rooting palm trunks. This virus was previously referred in the catalog. We used as a non-occlude baculovirus. People didn't know where to put this virus. Now it's including the nudivirus groups, a new group, of viruses that are arthropod specific. They have a double-strand DNA. They have an envelope in rod-shaped virion. So they are phylogenetic similar, close to the baculovirus group. And this virus now is called Oryctus drinoceros nudivirus. It was first found in Malaysia. And the way this program works is that the adult usually become infected during mating and also when they ingest food, contaminated food. And they have this aggregation behavior. So the adults, they serve as a flying reservoir because they can bring the disease and the virus to other places. They can carry the virus within the midgut for up to 5 to 6 weeks, and they just keep flying and spreading the disease. Usually the adults are, they don't die with the disease, but it reduces the fecundity. The females lay less eggs, and also they live less than the uninfected females. But the virus is lethal to the larvae, so when you get into the breeding sites, then it causes a lot of mortality. So initially they start to release this virus by just infecting adults and releasing the infected adults in the field, but then they enhance the transmission by creating some compost pile, putting some pieces of the trunk, and then this stimulate and the adults, and then you have this dissemination of the disease. So the virus was first released in Samoa in 1967, and over a period of 21 years, it had been released 18 times. And in every single release, the pathogen established and provide a good measure of control. And then you see here some pictures, the place that were released, where a lot of palm plantation, coconut and oil palm. So this is one of the examples, one of the few examples of using pathogens and nematodes that provide very good control. Pathogens have been used mostly to target a coleopteran pest or hemipteran pest and also dipteran pest. This is probably similar to what we see with parasitoids and predators. Although we have here only 4 hymenoptera species, in 100% of the case that pathogen was introduced or nematode against hymenoptera, it provide efficient control. Actually, there's the Diladinus nematode introduced and also 2 virus species against hymenoptera pest. We also compare the target host, if the target host was native in the place or if it was an invasive species. And then we found that 63% of the programs target invasive species. So this is interesting because 37% of the case, pathogen was released against a native species. So this is not what people have been doing more recently. And also interesting that the establishment rate was very similar when was targeted a native and invasive species. Pathogens and nematodes have been used globally, in all the continents except Antarctica. North America is the place that has been used most here. Same thing for parasitoids and predators. And also, there's a large number of release against pests on island and also in mainland. So, for parasitoids and predators, people say that its release are more successful on island. You know, it's a close place that, although the establishment rate was similar. But in our case here, pathogens and nematodes, they provide the same establishment rate in both island and mainland. We also compare this with the habitat type. We define here as a soil, root feeding insects, and also here tree crops, mostly wood perennial crops such as palm, coconut, citrus, coffee, and other crops. And then you have forestry, herbaceous crops are mostly the annual crops. And then we see that more than 50% of the release were in forestry and also in tree crops. Those are more stable environment. And also we see here that the establishment rate was actually higher on those more stable environment, 67% on forestry and 63% on tree crops. All the other habitat types had less than 40% establishment. Same thing had been observed for parasitoids and predators, and this is probably due to the fact that when in an annual crop, for example, we have chemical inputs, you know, pesticides, herbicides, fungicides that affect the pathogen release, and also rotation, crop rotation, and so those are factors that affect establishment. We provide some different kinds of comparisons between parasitoids and predators with the microbes, and although we have only 131 cases of introduction of pathogens, the establishment rate was higher than parasitoids and predators. It was 48% against 35%. And also, we have some indication of number of pests, number of biocontrol agents, places that were released, and then the target pests. For example, parasitoids have been used mostly for Homoptera and Lepidoptera, and pathogens were mostly used against Coleoptera and Hemiptera. Both were used worldwide, most released in the United States. Establishment was similar, comparing island versus mainland in both cases, except that the fact that the success was great on islands for parasitoids and predators, you don't have this information for pathogens. When you look at all the few cases that I mentioned that were the most successful case of pathogen and nematodes, we have some characteristics that are common in all of those. And for example, all of them have a transmitted stage that is resistant. It persists in the environment. So it's important that the natural media has produced some spores or something that would survive a long time in the field. They are virulent, causing high levels of mortality. It does not mean that some other pathogens like Microsporidia have efficient control using the classical approach also, because they can, although they are not lethal, they cause sublethal effects. In the long term, they can provide a good measure also of control. But I'm just comparing here the ones that I mentioned before. They are highly specific. The most important thing is that they are collecting an area that it has a similar climate to the area that we're going to release. And in most cases, they're released against perennial crops. But if pathogens are, you know, you have those very cases that are very successful, why they're not using more? In how researchers are trying to use more pathogens? Well, some of those reasons are related to the fact that because the knowledge of using predators and parasitoids it starts much earlier, most of the programs they are conducted by entomologists, and they want to use bugs to control bugs. And of course, it's not as easy to go to a foreign country and search for a pathogen, because usually you need some specialized procedures and equipment, and sometimes you don't have this available in a foreign country. So diagnosis, isolation, culture media, all those things are more difficult than just collect a live insect and bring to the lab. The other problem is that the taxonomy of most of the entomopathogens is ambiguous. So we cannot release a pathogen that you cannot distinguish the species or strain that you're releasing. Most of the biological characteristics of the pathogens, they are not determined yet. So it requires, you know, a long time that you have to do all the studies before you can get approval for release. And also, usually the regulations provide some restrictions, and I think people are really aware of introducing a pathogen in a new land. And there's always this concern of introducing a pathogen. You know, some authors question if the benefit of introducing a natural enemy would be is overweight the environmental risk that we have. So we have written a book chapter in this book, Environment Impact of Microbial Insecticides, where you look at all the 121 cases and trying to find information about if people have done some non-target study before the release, or even if it was an accidental introduction, if people went back and look if there was only if there's any effect on some non-target species. We never found any case where substantial mortality to a non-target species was detected or caused any other effect on human, animal health, or any other impact on the environment. Of course, for each release, you have to work this in a case by case, and you have to understand better the host range of the pathogen. So, I'm saying this is just an introduction for the next talks. The next talk would be about different programs that are currently being conducted now. First ones are tube mites, the cassava green mite and the tomato red spider mite. They are invasive species in Africa. I have been working with this using a fungal pathogen, the genus Neozygaites. And also there is the new invasive species Cyrex here in the United States, and Microsporidia has been planned to be introduced against gypsy moth. So, I will take any question, if I can answer.
Plenty of time for questions. Okay.
You gave an error rate for pathogens. Is there one for insects? You said that there are no non-host effects.
Probably, I don't remember now. The question is if there's any other, you know, non-target effect using parasitoid and predator.
Yeah, compared to everything else.
Yeah.
It makes us look good.
Yeah.
I don't remember. No, in any case.